Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School. So listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Darren Cassidy is Managing Director of global print tech company Xerox in the UK and Ireland. He's been with Xerox for more than 33 years. In that time, he has had 18 different roles across at least two continents and been at the forefront of the company's digital transformation from the world of paper and print to tech and tech services. He's also a great advocate for what he calls adaptive leadership and an evangelist for the benefits of transcendental meditation, which he practices every day. Darren Cassidy, it is a great privilege to welcome you to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Max. Delighted to be here.
So we'll come to the meditation later, but there's one thing I've got to get off my chest here. I noticed that in recent times, certainly since I wrote this, you've taken on an additional role. What is that?
Yeah, that we said before. Life in Xerox and business generally changes fast. So in the last couple of months, taken on an additional responsibility looking after Western Europe, which is for us Netherlands, France, as well as the UK business. So excited about that. It's another change. It's more to adapt to as we go forward. But very excited.
Okay, good stuff. So primarily, or up until very recent times, you're MD of Xerox in the UK and Ireland. So I'll start with the obvious question. How difficult is it to lead digital transformation in a global brand best known in the world of paper and print?
Yeah, I mean, we're an iconic 100-year-old company that invented photocopying and printing as we know it today. So, yeah, the transition from print to digital is one we're still going through. As a company, we are reinventing ourselves again because it's not just digital, but you know, the world of data and AI and automation and robotics is upon us, and we're embracing that and have been. The biggest challenge and the most exciting bit is around the management of change with people and teams. The technology bit, frankly, is less of a challenge. We've been at the forefront of technology, physical with print and digitally for a long time. You'll know we had Palo Alto Park. We invented the PC, the LAN, the mouse ahead of our time before Mr. Jobs managed to get his hands on that for different reasons. So technology-wise, Xerox have been right on the bleeding edge of creating new ways of working. The biggest challenge we have actually is, as a business, how do we change the business, the process, the people, the mindsets, the infrastructure to go and be all that we need to be and relevant for not only today, but for many years to come.
And I guess part of that is, the most important part is also, how do you turn it into a business? How do you commercialize that? How do you continue to make money? And then second part, I guess, how do you take your people with you?
Yeah. Well, you talked about my role in the UK. In the UK company, it surprises people to know, but 70% of the revenues that we get today don't come from print in the office space, 70%. So we've been at this for a while. And actually, if you think about it...
So what do they come from?
They come from the other services that we provide, those services around digital automation, those services around taking scanned images from physical paper pages and transforming that into data that can be used in the digital world. It comes from using robotics to help people automate processes, but it also comes from helping companies communicate and become efficient marketing organizations in a world that blends digital communication, data decision-making, as well as appropriate personalized print as part of campaigns. So we do a lot of different things.
So in very practical terms, what does that come down? The reason I ask is that I read something about you doing 3D printers on the Royal Navy ships or something of that nature?
That came out of our innovation center, and we've just sold that business. Recognizing that it was great innovation, wonderful, but really just a little bit far away from our core business. So as we start to really double down and invest on the journey that we want to go on, that was one of the things that we moved to the side. But it's a great example of technology. Yes, we're doing 3D metal printing Not for prototypes, but for real parts. And we do have our equipment on Navy ships printing parts. If you think, if you're on a Navy ship and you're at war and you've got a part that you can't carry, you don't want to have to say, hold on to the war. We're going to go back and pick something up. So you can see that, you can see the need there.
But I was just going to say, that's so far removed from where you've come from relatively recently in terms of paper and print.
It's true, but it's print. And actually, the marriage there was actually infusing our production print heritage, know-how, manufacturing capabilities and thinking with the additive 3D business and create something. But look, the truth is, it's now too far away from where we want to focus going forward. I think you practically, what is it that we do and why are we relevant? Well, when you've been an organization that we have that has been printing in companies, when you're printing, you're printing pages and paper that move the organization along. It's typically advancing a process, communicating information. We know how businesses work. And actually, when you know where paper is and what it's doing, you're really well placed to help organizations get it out, automate, streamline processes, and be more efficient in what they do. And that's where we come from.
Okay. So how difficult is it, or has it been, or will it continue to be, for you to take the company on that journey?
Yeah, it's change is exciting and difficult at the same time. Emotionally, we've got, in my opinion, in our company, we've got some of the best people in any company anywhere. I'll stand our people up against everybody, and they want to change and they want to go on the journey. But change is tough. You've been doing things for a long time. Your systems are set up to operate in a way. Your IT systems are built for a world that was, not necessarily for a world that will be. So some of the challenges around people, And the tough news is, some of the people that have served us the best for the last 30 years aren't going to be the people that want to or are able to go on the next 30 years journey, and that's okay. It's okay for that. But also, some of the systems, the IT, the infrastructure, and the way that you set up your business has to be different with the pace of change that's going on right now. And in our company, we're going through another, we call it reinvention, and it starts with we are completely reorganizing the infrastructure of our business to what we need to be tomorrow, not what we was yesterday. And that's a challenge.
Okay. So personally, individually, how do you manage that? How do you manage yourself in those situations?
Yeah. So managing yourself, certainly as a leader, but as a person within the business, it's important, because I think the biggest challenge we've got is there are so many things that we could place our attention on. There are so many things that you could do. When you look at one situation, it's very easy to come up with 20 things that you could be doing. I actually think one of the biggest leadership skills through change, what the teams need, is clarity. They need clarity about where to place their attention. Where are we focused? Where are we going to double down on? And that's something that I work hard on with my teams. I annoy everybody because I've got a thing about strategies on a page, focus on the page. Not because I love it being on one page, but it's hard. It's hard to be as clear as you need to be so that you can get the focus of attention in the right place, and then build that down into your organization.
It's that old line, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one.
Yes. So Winston Churchill, I believe. It's so true.
Yes, absolutely. So you're a big advocate of leaders learning how to get themselves into the right mindset. Mindset is a thing which I've seen you've written about in a number of places. So the right mindset to get a job done. How do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's I talk about mindset a lot. I come from a sporting background, and mindset was one of the most under-trained aspects of performing in sport at a high level. It's the same in business. You know, when you go into a situation, you either see opportunities and possibility or you see problems. The difference is massive. The difference is really big practically in terms of how you want to move things forward. So, and by the way, it's not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. You know, as humans, we do those things. I believe that mindset is a skill. And by choosing to believe it's a skill, the rules of skills apply, which means you can get better at them. We all start from different places. We might bring something innate to the table when we start. But like every skill, if you pay attention to it, if you're deliberate about what you do, you can get better. And mindset, being positive, being clear, being engaging, and continuing to do that as a leader and as an individual when you take on tasks is very, very different and obvious when you see it and when you feel it versus, and we've all been there, versus that I don't want to do this, poor me, it's not fair. It's just not helpful in the world of performance.
And do you think anyone can do it? Or do you have to have some innate?
I think anybody can do it. And that's why I choose to call it a skill. I do think people start from different places. You know, we start from different places, maybe, to do with some innate things that we start with. We certainly have different experiences and a different environment that we've developed in, whether that's personally or professionally. So we definitely start from different places. But I've seen everybody improve. If you measure on 0 to 10, if you're starting at 8, you can still get to 10. If you're starting at 2, you can get to 8. And I like that because it means that it's empowering for everybody and people. We can take responsibility for moving us along.
And so this is obviously a big thing for your leadership, the idea that you take the people around you and you create the right mindset within them. Is that right?
I think they create their own mindset.
You've got to guide them as the leader, though, haven't you?
We support. I mean, I think paying attention, talking about it like this, providing some tools and support to do it. Listen, we've got a CEO, Steve Bandovich, who's one of the greatest components of a positive mindset. I was with him with some young children with the Prince's Trust yesterday. Actually, he came over in the from the US, and he talked to 15. young adults who are looking to break into the world of business. And the thing that he said, what is it that's got him where he's got, from a kid that was shot at, stabbed, grew up in a tough part of New York, what got him? He said it was his mindset, it was his attitude. And you know, there are many things that you can't control in life and in business. There are so many things that are going to happen, but actually, if you can get control and skillfully apply the right mindset, a positive mindset to those things, you can control how you respond. So even in a world where there's lots going on, controlling your response, being deliberate about that response and making it the most productive to move things forward is a skill, and is in a world that's changing as fast as it is, in my opinion, one of the biggest skills that leaders need today.
Okay, so while we're talking about minds, you're also a great personal believer in the power of daily mindfulness sessions. And tell us about that.
I laugh because I remember how I started. I'm a rugby player, a football player, and the thought
let's just hang on there. You're a good rugby player, weren't you? Northampton Saints at one point.
I had a couple of seasons at Northampton Saints. Didn't quite make the top grade there, but was very close. And then played at Henley Hawks in the National Leagues and started my career at this. So I had a great time. And
So semi-professional rugby, and you picked up a lot of what you're about to say from that background, as it were.
Well, the notion of performing as part of a team, the notion of preparing, practicing, and actually starting to bring in the requirement to have a team that's aligned and perform under pressure and focus on the things that you can control. Can't control the referee's decisions, can't control the weather, can't control the opposition at the time, but you can control how you respond. And responding collectively as a team was always more powerful than 15 individuals going off and doing what they thought were the right thing. Always more powerful. And that's taught me a lot about teams and how they operate under pressure in business. But I mentioned that because you said about meditation. If you'd have told me 15 years ago when I sat in the changing room ready to run out that I'd be talking about meditation, I would have probably laughed at you. But it's an important thing. I lived in New York for 4 or 5 years, and there was, it's the one time in my Zurich career where actually things started to feel a little bit dark around me. I didn't fully appreciate it at the time. I'm normally very, very positive about everything. And I think outwardly I still was, But my wife noticed it. And what I, now looking back, what had happened was I was on an assignment in the US. The company was going through a lot of change. We had Kyle Icahn was an activist on our board. He was making lots of changes, putting new people in. They were changing leadership. And I was okay with the potential of not having my job. But I realized I was on an assignment in the US. And the things that were at threat were my, were where we live, the school that my daughter was at. She'd just broken into an acting school.
It's tough stuff, isn't it?
So things started to get a little bit heavy on my mind.
Yes.
We went on holiday, and my wife announced as we got there, she said, I love you, but I think you're going to be cross with me. Tomorrow morning, you're going to go and do this meditation course because I think it'll be great for you. And she was right. I was cross with her. But the next day, I rocked up and I did the TM meditation that we talked about.
Tell me about the course. How did that go?
Well, it's 2 or 3 1-hour sessions that you do. And 30 minutes after the first session, you're actually meditating and I felt something.
Yeah.
I need to feel.
It was that immediate.
It was absolutely that immediate, and I then realized that there was something in this. I like the fact it's the most researched, medically researched, scientifically researched meditation. I like the fact that they talk to you about what happens in your brain. I'm one of those people that need to know why and how things
right,
work.
Yes.
I like that, but I really bought it when I felt something doing it, and I felt that I could do it. It's so. The learning wasn't difficult. It's steeped in history, but it's very modern with regards to the research. But it's so practical. I can sit on an aeroplane, on the tube. I did on the train on the way here this morning. I can sit there with noise around me and I do 20 minutes meditation and it helps.
So are you doing 20 minutes meditation every day?
I do 20 minutes every day. And when I'm doing it really well, I'll do it twice a day. I'll get some time in the afternoon and I just go and grab somewhere quiet in the office if I'm in the office to do it. But I'm not as good as I should be. It's something, you know, it's certainly work in progress, but pretty much every day once, and I should do it twice because, again, it makes another difference.
And how do you feel afterwards?
Just the thing for me the meditation does, it just, research will tell you it's some of the best deep rest that you get, better than sleeping. So 20 minutes meditation, you see what it does to your brain function, it gives you deep rest. For me, it just feels like it slows things down a little. I just feel I talk a little bit slower, a little bit quieter. I think a little bit clearer. So when the pressure gets on, when things get a bit busy and your mind gets a bit busy, that's especially when I know, hey, just I've got a tool set here called meditation where I can just calm and connect and slow things down a little.
And you've clearly become an evangelist for it.
Sounds like it. It sounds like it. Yeah, the meditation team would be pleased with me. Listen, I'm work in progress. I'm not an expert at this. I've just said for me, with the way that, yes, my work is and that the life is, my wife and I will wake up in the morning, we'll sit in bed together and we'll do meditation as we wake up. It works. God. It works for me.
Well, you make it sound transformational. I'm going to have a look at that. So another one of your mantras is that leaders must create a culture of learning.
Yep. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, learning's so important. It's so important. If you're, there's just the pace of change out there today means if we're not learning, we're falling backwards really fast. I mean, we're going through the slowest technical change that we'll ever experience in our lifetime right now. The pace is going to be frightening or excited, whichever way you want to look at it. But it requires us to keep learning. And I think as humans, as leaders, as people, it does something to you as a discipline to just go and figure out, learn something every day. It means you can open your eyes, you can open your ears, you can put yourself in positions to learn.
So in terms of learning, are you talking about regularly doing online courses? Are you talking about academic learning? Are you?
I think there's many different ways, but reading articles. Yeah. Do something a day. Go on a podcast.
Yes, yes.
Podcast's a good idea.
But
talk to people. Be inquisitive. Ask questions. Spend time talking to people about things that you don't know and listen, truly listen, and engage in those things. They're things that I think are really important. So try and find time to do something each day, something that just gets me a little bit of knowledge in a different area.
Okay. So moving back to your career at Xerox, 33 years, man and boy, it's a very big brand. And obviously, as we've just touched upon, you had 18 different roles in there. But that's still unusual to stay with one company for such a long period of time. So what challenges have you had in building your career within one business?
Yeah, it is unusual, but not in our company, interestingly. Yeah, if you have a look at the number of people in our business, we've got a lot of people with my tenure. In fact, I was at an event 3 weeks ago, and someone had been there over 50 years still.
You don't get that.
Well, do you know, in some ways at Xerox, our biggest strength is the people, our people. I've told you, I've said that. Their loyalty to the company, the environment that we create is very good. But also our biggest strength is we've got a lot of people who've been there 35 years. Greatest strength, 35 years of tenure. We know we bleed Xerox, but our greatest weakness at times is 35 years experience in one company. Which is why learning and developing from outside in is so important if you want to stay in a single company. But I've been at this company for this long because I love the culture. And I still today, I feel like that young kid that joined 33 years ago, 34 years in August. I still feel like the young kid that wanted to come and do well and challenge everything and bring energy to all the situations. The company's been good to me. I feel like we've got unfinished business. I generally feel like we're on this reinvention again in a changing world and market, and I feel vested in making sure I play a part to do that.
You stay so enthusiastic after 33 years and a number of reinventions, as you say.
Yeah, indeed. Listen, but the minute that goes for me, I'll know that my time is done. I wake up each day getting ready to go to work, and I'm excited about the opportunity. I don't love every bit of every day, right? There's some tough things, and we have to do tough things in business, especially when you're re-engineer where the business is. But generally, yeah, I feel a passion for what we do. I feel a passion and a responsibility to the people that are in our business today and the families of the people that will be in our business tomorrow to make sure that we're doing the right things and lead it. And do you know what? Our clients need us to be great. Our clients need us to be great.
Wow. Were you always driven like this right from the start? I don't know, cricket, football, rugby, school, college, whatever. I mean, did you always think you'd end up being in charge?
Sport-wise, if I spoke to my mother, I wasn't going to just play football. I was going to play football for England. I didn't quite make that.
Well, your dad was a professional footballer.
My dad was a professional footballer. Mum was a professional dancer. So I had every chance. Football and sport, I knew what I wanted to do. In business, it didn't happen quite that way. I drifted a little bit through school because I wanted to be a sportsman. I left school, finished my O-levels, and I went to work in a firm of solicitors that I'd been to for work experience. I didn't even try. I didn't spend much time thinking about what I wanted to be. I just went and did it. And it was about 2 years after that I realized I definitely don't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to get into selling. People kept saying to me, you're great when you're talking to people. Why are you sat in an office in the background doing things, sat behind lawyers and truthfully not really knowing what I was doing in the detail? And then I started to go into selling. And that led me to Xerox because I started to sell life assurance and realized that what I really wanted to do was proper selling. I wanted to sell with the best company. Every time I asked people about sales, they said, the best sales company in the world is Xerox. Go and get Xerox. So I went for a job. I didn't get it, by the way. They turned me away because I wasn't a graduate. They only took on graduates. So I had to thumb a lift because my lift didn't turn up from Oxfordshire to Birmingham to go to the interview. I ran through the NEC for the last 2 miles, so I turned up probably all sweaty and horrible. And I did the interview.
Well, at some point in this podcast, I'm going to have to explain to younger listeners what thumbing a lift is. But anyway, yeah. Go on.
Yes, that's true, actually. So I had the interview and didn't do well, didn't get it. But I remember as I was walking out saying, is there anything I can do to get another shot here? And I said, go and get some industry experience. So I went back and I did that. I moved from Oxford. I went into London. I got a job in one of the small dealers that was with another brand. I went and did that for 16 months. Didn't love it, but learned a lot. And I went back to Xerox and banged on the door and said, hey, I'm back again. I've got my experience. Can I have a job? And I went through another two or three interviews, but I managed to get the job. That was important to me because you know what I said about I felt like that young challenger? The minute that I walked in there and I looked around at how great everything was and I remember what it was being like in this small dealer where I had to pretend to be the engineer as well as the sales guy and the account manager and I looked around thinking, you have no idea how good it is here. Let's go. And I still feel that today. Let's go. So that's where some of the energy comes from.
The crucial line in that was almost for me, was almost the very first one where you said, at the end of the interview where you found out you hadn't got the job, you said, well, what could I do to get it next time? So that, having the presence of mind to say, just a minute, well, where do I go next? That's something that somebody could take away from this podcast, couldn't they?
Maybe I hadn't thought of it that way. It felt like it was out of desperation from where I was coming from. But yeah, actually just not accepting defeat, not accepting that it's finished there, trying to get control of some next steps. Certainly when you're engaging in sales, you want to make sure that you understand what the next steps are and see if you can bring that to within your control. So yes, I hadn't thought of it that way.
I was asking for constructive feedback. It's a great thing. Wow, what a great story. So that you spent a decade or so in sales. Do you think that selling is sufficiently recognised as a leadership skill?
No, but it should be. Not just as a leadership skill, but as a skill and a profession. Sales done well is tough to do, has high impact, and creates great skills. But as a leader, if you think in its truest sense about selling, selling has never been about, I've got this, I'm going to push it on somebody. It hasn't been about that for me, and certainly in Xerox. It's not what I regard as selling. Selling's about, I need to know you as a client or as an individual. I need to understand your drivers, your business. I need to understand your needs. And then my job is to try and help you connect with something that can fulfill your needs. I'm taking you on a journey as a good seller. I'm taking you on a journey of change. I'm not even thinking about doing something different. I've got some information. You've created a bit of a gap in what I think is possible versus where I am. And now as the buyer then becomes ready themselves to go and make the next change. So what you're doing is you're helping a person make a change decision. Well, if that's selling, and then you think about leadership, well, leadership in the world that we live in now, more than ever before, is about helping people and teams and businesses go on the journey of change. So how we communicate, what we communicate, and how that works is underpinned by the same sort of principles that you know and love when you're selling well.
Okay, so what's your proudest achievement?
My children. You mean in work? My proudest achievement, there's two things. The one thing is, generally, I love it when people that I've worked with get bigger jobs and get promoted. I always said to people, I'll be working for you one day. I love that. I genuinely celebrating success of people moving out of my business into other areas. I love it. It's the biggest accolade, I think, as a business, not me, but as our part of the business. I do love that. There's two other things that come to mind. One of them was because I was told we couldn't do it, we shouldn't do it. One was creating our first managed service for our channels. It was 15 years ago when we created a managed service. It was around print that we launched to our channel environment around a year. I liked it because everybody said it wouldn't work. Everybody said we couldn't do it. It's 1.8 billion a year now. Very proud of the team that we put together to go and do that in creating that service called XPPS. Remember it. But actually, my proudest moment was the day that I became MD of the UK for the first time, because I remembered what it was like the first time I went to the boardroom to see these legendary people that were sat there. And I still feel like an imposter when we sat around our boardroom table. And I remember the people that were there then, Bill Good and Stephen Cronin and Russell Peacock, legendary figures in my development, how it felt. So that moment that I sat there, I had to work quite hard to really understand how people now might see me, because I'm still me. But recognizing that when I did stand back and I had a look around a couple of times, I did shed a tear and say, hey, this is pretty cool. Didn't last long, because then life picks up and you move on again.
Okay, and on the flip side, what do you look back on and say, oh, Lord Almighty, I wish I'd done that a little bit better?
Oh, I do that every day. I mean, there are lots of things and mistakes that I make all the time, but I've learned to think the mistakes are okay. In fact, they're good. I say to my team, if we're not making mistakes, you just make mistakes, learn and move. If we're not making mistakes, we're not pushing hard enough. So one of the things that I do know about myself is I have a tendency to want to do too much in too short space of time. when I pick my teams, I'm always looking for people that will stand up and say, well, Darren, slow down, this one. It's why I go for this one page. It's not my natural planning's not my natural place. My natural place is, right, let's go, energy. We can do everything. We can be anything because we can. But the mistakes I've made is when I've tried to do too much too fast without the clarity that we've got. And it's why some of the tools that I talk about, the one-pagers, picking the team with the people around me that are brave enough or good enough to say, stop, slow down, do this, challenge me. I'm always the first pick on my team. I'm looking for who's that person that's going to be vocal with me. And
so you don't surround yourself with yes men and women.
Okay. I can't imagine anything worse than having people around me that are all like me. I mean, one of the things for me about diversity and why it's so important, and at Xerox, we've been doing this for real for a long time. You know, it was our CEO, Wilson, who went out into the race riots in Rochester, New York, 55 years ago, and made a commitment around diversity that we stick to every day. We have a thing called the Wilson Rule. We have diverse candidates. Diversity for me is having different thinking, different people, different backgrounds, so that we make good decisions in pressured moments. So the thought of having 10 of me, I mean, it would kill my business. As good as I'd like to think I am, it would kill my business if I surrounded myself with people like me. So no, that's not what okay. we need.
I'm guessing there might only be one of you anyway, but that's another story. Okay, so looking back on your very successful career, finally, what single piece of leadership advice might you offer for the leaders and would-be leaders over here at Nottingham Business School?
When you say looking back, I suddenly feel old, like I'm looking back and it's over. There's lots to go.
Oh, but even if you became president.
There's lots to go. And then there will be a life after finishing at Xerox that I've got to think about as well. I'm not ready to stop anything yet. Best bit of advice. Sometimes I think we overthink things a little. We're looking for the perfect next thing. I always say to people, learning what you don't like is every bit as important as learning what you do like. You're going to have to go and get some scars and fall over and do things. So go and do some things. Go and try some things. Don't take the next safe job that keeps you in the same part of the business without expanding and trying. So don't be scared of failing. It's exactly what we need to go and develop ourselves. Take a risk in what you're doing. But the biggest bit of personal advice, I'll tell you a quick story in a second as well, because I had this played back to me by one of my sons this week, actually, is bring energy. If the one thing that I want from people is bring energy to the situation that you're in. If you're a leader, bring energy to your team because it's infectious and they deserve it. And by the way, it helps you perform. I was on a call with my son this week, and he phoned me, there's a few other people on the call, and he phoned me, you're right, Dad. And I said, yeah, fine. So he said, remember you always told me, he said, you didn't bring as much energy as you normally do today. I'm just checking in to see if you're okay. And he left it, because don't forget, bring energy. It's not good if you don't. Put the phone down on me. So that was good.
If you're getting calls like that from your son, though, you're doing something right. That's great stuff. Hey, listen, Darren Cassidy, bringing energy to every conversation, I guess. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here on this episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, why not have a look over some of the others that are also available, including those with the Chair of the English Football Association, Debbie Hewitt MBE, the MD of global financial services company Experian, José Luis Rossi, and the Chef de Mission of the Paralympics GB team, Penny Briscoe OBE. This episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast was produced for Nottingham Trent University by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.